Okay, this is dedicated for Refuah Shlema for Rav Yitzchak Moshe ben Sara Golda. So I'd like to talk about a little bit today a topic that's kind of alluded to in the parasha, and also, as we'll see a little bit further in the discussion, has a little more relevance also to the sixth parasha specifically, but it's really relevant by definition to every parasha, and that is one of the hardest mitzvahs we have, Mitzvah Rabbanan of Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum. And that's alluded to the Levush's famous Remez, that the first words of this parasha, Ve'eilu Shmos, are kind of a hint to this mitzvah that we have of V'chayev Adam Likros HaParsha Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum. And that is indeed a mitzvah Rabbanan. It's the Gemara Maseches Brachas and Daf Ches. The Gemara tells us that Rabba Huna Bar Yehuda said to Rav Ami that La'olam Yashlim Adam Parshiyosav Im HaTzibur Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum. That one should always try to complete his parsha, the parsha, together with the Tzibur Shnayim Mikra, twice in the text. You should read the text twice. The targum, v'echa targum, and you should read some type of translation once. So Shnayim Mikra, the text twice, and the targum once, and that's the din that we have, that every week individuals are supposed to read the parsha twice, together with, let's say for now, the targum unculus. We'll discuss that a little bit more. And that constitutes this commandment, nidrabbanan. So it's a big discussion why we have such a din, and how does that play out. So there is one view which unfortunately doesn't take such a dominant place in halacha, because it would let a lot of us off the hook. There is the position of the Ravan, that the Ravan understood, the Ravan is one who shown and had this understanding of this din, that the purpose of Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum is really for people who don't have access to a minyan, people who don't go to shul, and therefore in order to kind of recreate the Kriyas HaTorah experience for themselves, so they are told to read Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum. And therefore, each part of Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum corresponds to something else within Kriyas HaTorah. That in the Kriyas HaTorah structure, you have a person reading, you have a person getting an aliyah, and then we don't have this anymore, but once upon a time, there was an institution of a matargim, a person who would stand there and, so to speak, translate. So the two readings, the Shnayim Mikra, would correspond to the Ola and to the Balkore, and the Targum would correspond to the Metagim. So therefore the Ravan explained that the goal of Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum was to recreate this Kriyas HaTorah experience, and therefore the function is really for those people who, for whatever reason, be it where they lived, be it their personal circumstances, whatever it is, don't make it to shul on Shabbos, so Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum was a way to kind of recreate that. So that would suggest a pretty significant kula, that people who do go to shul on Shabbos wouldn't be obligated. However, I don't believe this opinion is really brought lahalacha. It doesn't really seem to have been adopted by poskim as far as letting you off the hook in that sense. You do sometimes find discussion, though, of people who are in circumstances where they can't learn for whatever reason, in addition to the normal, some Kriyas HaTorah in addition to the normal laning, so you do find sometimes that Shnayim Mikra is held up as some type of replacement for laning. But as far as getting us off the hook, so I don't know if it's really quote the halacha so much in that sense. And in fact, in the Sefer Tov Roi, which is a collection of different writings of Rav Kook, organized Al Pi Seder HaGemara. So in the Sefer Tov Roi on the Maseches Brachos, so he suggests that that's, the Gemara has this expression, Im HaTzibur, that one is told to finish reading Shnayim Mikra V'Yechad Targum with the Tzibur. This language of with that Tzibur is really to show us that there are two separate obligations. One, there is the Kriyas HaTorah, there is the laning that takes place with the congregation. And then there's also the individual laning, that's what Shnayim Mikra is. There's two separate obligations. There's one obligation to lane together in shul, and there's another obligation to do it personally. That's what Shnayim Mikra represents. And one doesn't replace the other, they work together. Just parenthetically, this whole question of the role of laning is a discussion in general. The Torah reading that we have in shul, happens to be a large discussion, which we're not for now, but just to be aware of, whether that Kriyas HaTorah is meant to be a individual obligation, just that you need to do it together with the minyan. We need a minyan in order to lane, but perhaps the obligation of forming a minyan, the obligation of going to a minyan to hear Kriyas HaTorah is a personal obligation. While there are others who understood that Kriyas HaTorah is more of a communal obligation, that the tzibor, the community, has an obligation to hold the Kriyas HaTorah at the appropriate times, but it's not really an individual responsibility to attend that Kriyas HaTorah. It's the responsibility that devolves on the community more than it does on the individual. And the story goes that this was the position of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, was that it was an individual obligation, that there is a personal responsibility to hear Kriyas HaTorah, and that's why the story has it that Reb Soloveitchik, Chaim's grandson, when he would come to YU, so he would come to YU, I think, on a Monday afternoon, he would travel Monday morning, he would miss Kriyas HaTorah in the morning, so when he got back to YU, he would have a Kriyas HaTorah set up then, in order to make up his responsibility of Kriyas HaTorah in the morning, and that he would frequently have Monday afternoon lanings in YU, and people would walk past and be a little bit surprised, wondering why people are laning Monday afternoon, and the answer was because he felt that it was an individual responsibility and he had to make it up, not having heard it in the morning. Others disagreed, and the story has it that when Reb Soloveitchik was a child, so he went to visit his other grandfather, Reb Elia Prusner, who was the author of the Tshuvas Halichas Elio, and he said that he had heard that his mechutin, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, was of the opinion that Kriyas HaTorah is a personal obligation, and he told the young Reb Yosher Ber, you go tell your other grandfather that there's a Ramban in Megillah not that way, but the Ramban in his commentary to Megillah seems to understand Kriyas HaTorah as a communal obligation. But in any case, that's a dispute which has ramifications that are outside the context of this topic, but it could be that really what we have here is a two-pronged approach. We have a communal obligation, that's what Kriyas HaTorah is about, and we have an individual obligation, that's what Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum is about, and therefore that would call into question this kula of the Ravan. It's not necessarily phrased as the kula, but what would have been the kula of the Ravan to allow one to replace the other, because they really do represent two separate obligations. But again, then, so what is the point of this obligation? Why are we told to do Shnei Mikra? So on the one hand, it's a very straightforward approach. The Levush explains, Kadesh Yehe Baki Bataru, that we want that people should be fluent in Chumash. And if we ask that you read the Parsha twice yourself every week, together with some type of Targum, so the hope is that over the course of a year, and over the course of many years of doing this again and again, you will become fluent in Chumash. And that's apparently one of our goals, to encourage fluency in the Torah, and that's something we want to encourage. The Tzlach points out the commentary of the Nod Behuda on Gemara, the Tzion Nefesh Chayev. So he points out that that seems to also be part of the symbolism of three, that the Pasuk states, Chut HaMeshulish Lo B'Mehera Yinatek, that a cord that is wrapped around three times is so strong it's not going to get ripped. So there is this symbolism of Chazaka, or of strength, to something that's done three times. So if you read the parasha basically three times, albeit one of the times being in Targum, so one of them being in translation, so that is a way to ensure that you'll remember what you're learning and that it will become a part of you, and that's all very helpful. The Aruch HaShulchan understands also that the way Kriyas HaTorah, the pattern of Kriyas HaTorah is supposed to be, is limud and then shmir, of learning it to yourself and then hearing it from someone else. And he points out that seems to be the pattern of Mishnas HaTorah that was given in different stages. The Torah Gemara says in Masechet Sota that the Torah was given once in Har Sinai and then again in Arvis Moav, excuse me, then again in Ol Moed, and then again in Arvis Moav. So there seems to be this pattern that first you have to have everything laid out for you and then you go hear it again. So that's what Kriyas HaTorah and Shnei Mikra, how they work together, that first you kind of lay out the parsha for yourself, and then you go hear it read to you. That's the way learning goes. That's the way learning is supposed to go. So basically, Shnei Mikra and Kriyas HaTorah are supposed to complement each other as kind of a full learning experience. In the Sefer Naim L'Mishpat, he points out that the Sefer Naim L'Mishpat is the Likut of a lot of earlier sources. He observes that if you look in the Rambam and you look in the Shulchan Aruch, so nowadays I think a lot of people are makel to assume that if you read along with the Kriyas HaTorah, that could count for at least once. If you read the Parsha once and the Targum once beforehand, then you read along with the Laning, so that can count for at least once. But if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Rambam, it doesn't seem to sound that way. It seems to sound that way you have to do everything beforehand. And the Naim L'Mishpat explains why that is, because in his understanding, the real original reason for Takana, at least, was that the way Kriyas HaTorah at least used to be was not the way we do it nowadays, that you get called up to the Torah and somebody else reads. But rather, the way it used to be is that you get called up to the Torah and you would read. So you had to have, everyone had to kind of be in a certain level of...
Now what happened with that? What happened with that?
Right, we got rid of that because we were worried that there would be people who would not know how to do it, and we don't want to embarrass them. So since we don't want to embarrass people who don't know how to do it, we don't ask anyone to do it, because we don't want people to be put in a position of having to be embarrassed by saying they don't know how to do it. So we have a Kamenel Bal Koreh who's appointed to be the one who learns. But it used to be that the original practice was that whoever was called up, that's what it meant to get an Aliyah. You get called up and you learn. So we need people to be prepared, people to be on high alert. So that's what Shnei Mikvei HaTargum would affect, that if you read the parsha a little bit, so hopefully you're holding a little bit more in how to learn, and you'll be prepared if you would get called up. And some suggest that that's what the Gemara means. And the Gemara has this interesting... phrase that whoever does Shnei Mikvei HaTargum Marichin Lo Yomav Ushnosav. So if you fulfill this mitzvah, so it gives you a long life. So some explain it gives you a long life because you need a longer life if you're spending so much time reading the parasha back and forth. But others explain based on this idea that there is a Gemara in the end of Maseches Brachos that says that there are certain things that are not supposed to be such a siman bracha for a long life. And one of them is, you're not supposed to turn down an aliyah. If a person offers you an aliyah, so you're supposed to accept it. So you're not supposed to turn it down.
No, because I see people in the shuls that turn it down.
Right, so...
They don't want to get a donation, that's right.
No. This is a shuls where they don't...
Yeah, ideally you're not supposed to turn it down.
Right.
It's not considered to be such a great idea.
But you know, I've seen it, like, I'm in the shul Saturday, and they told these funny things. They turn it down.
Right, so we don't recommend that so much. The Gemara is critical of that approach. The Gemara recommends that you should accept the Aliyah. And if you take these two ideas together, so reading Shnei Mikvei HaTargum puts you more of a position to be able to accept the Aliyah. Because if in those times you had to be laning to get the Aliyah, so you need to be prepared. So Shnei Mikvei HaTargum puts you in a state of preparation, hopefully. So therefore, we understand this idea in the Gemara that it extends your life because it helps you to not have to turn down the Aliyah, and that's something that's supposed to be a bracha for life extension. So that's how some understand the purpose of Shnei Mikra is to have you prepared for laning in case you get Aliyah, so you shouldn't have to turn it down.
Doesn't Tosfos in the Gemara bracha say that you should have it done before Kiddush on Friday night?
So how does Kiddush fit into laning?
To the other sheet that said that you should do it before Kriyas HaTorah. We're supposed to say that. You're saying
why should Kiddush be the long? Why should Kiddush be the cutoff point? It's a good question. It seems that doesn't seem to put so much of a focus on laning.
Right.
Seems to put more of the focus on Shabbos. And why exactly that should be the cutoff point is an interesting question. It's something to figure out. It's an interesting thought. Just when we talk about the purpose of Shnei Mikra, it's just interesting to know where different codes put it in Halacha. The Rambam puts Shnei Mikra in Hilchas Tefillah, which is where Hilchas Kriyas HaTorah is. So he seems to lump it together with Kriyas HaTorah. In the Shulchan Aruch, it's in Hilchas Shabbos. Seems to attach it to part of your whole Shabbos preparation. And in the Orzaruah, it's together with Hilchas Kriyas Shema. How exactly does that fit in? I don't know, that's something to think about, but just interesting to note as far as we try to figure out what the whole purpose is. So the codes of law put it all in different places, which is just now an interesting thing to keep in mind. But in addition, so there's also the Trumas HaDeshen kind of brings together a lot of the ideas and says that the purpose of Shnei Mikra is for fluency in Torah. That's what we're going for. But Chazal Davka wanted it to be in kind of a communal sense, that it should be attached to what the Tzibur is doing. So this week the Tzibur is reading Shmos, Parsha Shmos, so there's an Indian that you should be fluent in Shmos. It's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, but it's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah that's specifically patterned after what the community is doing. Just as a maramakam, if you're interested in a little bit more of a approach, al piderach hanister, kind of a less straightforward approach, you can look in the commentary of the Chasam Sofer to Maseches Chulin, and Daf Chav Ches Amid Beis. He has a different take on this whole mitzvah, with a little bit more al piderach hanister. Feel free to take a look. So, one interesting point to discuss. So this is something that I mentioned. This mitzvah is especially relevant to this week's parasha, not just because of the Remez, but also the Sefer Psukim in it. So there are Psukim in Parashas Shmos that are particularly worth discussing. There's also Psukim in Parashas Matos Maaseh, one of the two parashas in Matos Maaseh. So there is a pasuk there. It's the name of cities, Ataris V'Divon. And that is quoted by the Gemara in Brachas that talks about Shnayim Mikra. The Gemara says you should always read Shnayim Mikra V'Echa Targum. And then the Gemara has this mysterious phrase afterwards, V'afilu Ataris V'Divon, that you're obligated to read every parasha Shnayim Mikra, even Ataris V'Divon, even these words, even these phrases, this pasuk, from Matas Maaseh. So the Rishonim all get into a big discussion, what is the Gemara trying to tell you when it says, even Ataris V'Divon? Why is the Gemara singling out one pasuk and saying, don't think this pasuk you can skip, this pasuk you got to read also? So Rashi is the first off at bat. Rashi explains, why do you have such a statement in the Gemara that you have to spell this one out? So Rashi says, and like the Rambam says, and like the Miri says, that the reason is because this pasuk doesn't have targum. This pasuk doesn't have a translation. It's the name of cities, names of cities, so it's just names. So this pasuk doesn't have a translation. So you might think that you don't have to read that one a third time. So apparently the Talmud is coming to tell you that you do. That's what it sounds like. Now, there are a couple of problems with that. First of all, if you had a chumash in front of you, so you'd look at the pasuk and you'd say, it's not true. There is an unklus. Unklus does have a different translation for this. Yeah, these happen to be names of cities, but if you look at unklus, it says, machlalta, mashbashta, it has a different translation for this. That's one problem. That's a little bit of an indication that the unklus that we use nowadays may not exactly correspond to the way it's been in the past, that there is some kind of a mixture between the different targum that has turned up nowadays as unklus. That's one problem. But besides which, even if that was the case, even if Ataris V'Divon doesn't have a translation, so there are other psukim that would have been more immediate examples. For example, in this week's parasha, Rishon, in this week's parasha, there are a number of psukim that are just straight names. Right? Be'elish Mos Ben Yisrael, and then the Gemara goes, then the Torah goes on to list Reuben, Shimon, Levi, who lists all the names. So there really isn't a targum. There, the targum is just going to repeat the names all over again in Aramaic, which is the same thing. So one could ask, so why was that not the example? And that is indeed the question of Tosfos. Tosfos asked over there in Brachas. Tosfos asked on Rashi that if the Gemara is just trying to tell you that there are certain psukim that don't really have a significant translation, that they're just names, so, and you have to read that anyway, so why did the Gemara not give the example from Parashat Shmos of Reuben, Shimon, etc.? So therefore, Tosfos suggests that the answer seems to be that it has to do with the fact that this pasuk Ataris V'Divon does have a translation in some Targumim. Tosfos understands it as being only a Targum Yerushalmi, that Tosfos took Rashi's word that there's no unklus for this phrase, but there is a Targum, an alternate Targum in Targum Yerushalmi, and so therefore you might think that there's some Targum for it, but it's not translated unklus, so maybe this one I could read three times in Hebrew. He says, rather, you should read it with the Targum Yerushalmi. It's better to try to find some Targum for it, not to just read it three times in Hebrew, as opposed, perhaps, to Reuben Shimon, where there is no Targum on any Targum, because every Targum just translates it as Reuben Shimon, etc. That's the way Tosfos understands. The Rush understands a little differently, and the Rush says, the reason the Gemara singles out Ataris V'Divon is because even though you don't think you need the Targum so much, but there is a Targum in it, but you might think it's still just names, so you don't really need it, so you might think you can just skip it. So the truth is, no, you have to read it with this Targum. As opposed, he says, to Reuben V'Shimon, that Yitaka don't have to read three times. And he says it's going to come out differently than the way Rashi understands it, because Rashi seems to understand it in a basic sense that anytime there's no Targum, you still do have to read it three times. And he relates that still the custom seems to be machmir like Rashi to read it three times. But in his opinion, he could have seen a possibility that something like Reuben V'Shimon you would only have to read twice. And similar lines There is Rabbeinu Yonah, who also says that you might think that a Taurus Adivon has no Targum Unklus, but only has Targum Yerushalmi, only has this other Targum. You might think that you could skip it. So the answer is, no, you shouldn't skip it. But as far as other psukim like Reuven and Shimon, so you should either read two times or three times. So in some Sfarim they point out the Sefer Berkas Chayin and Maseches Brachas, this whole debate here as to things that don't have a Targum, let's say Reuven Vishimon, so should you read it three times in Hebrew, or should you read it two times and just skip the Targum completely? So there seems to be a little bit of a question there as to what is the nature of this Takana, what is the nature of this institution of Shnei Mikvayach HaTargum. Is it ideally three times? Is it that Chazal wanted us to read the Parsha three times, just they told us the third time we should put in some translation so you'll have a little bit more of an understanding of it? And therefore, if you don't have a translation, so we tell you to read even Reuven Vishimon three times? Or is really the goal of Mikra just to read it twice? And then there's a separate institution of Targum, a separate institution of translation in order to have you understand it. So if you have a translation available to you, so then you should take it. But if not, then just read it two times, because that's the whole set, the whole idea of translation is a completely separate idea. That's something that some Sfarim talk about. Achronim take a whole different approach to try to explain what exactly is going on with the Taurus V'Divon. There's a number of different strands in this, so just to mention a few of them. I think the Taz writes that the reason the Gemara doesn't give the example of Reuven V'Shimon is because Reuven V'Shimon are the names of the tribes of Israel, so that, it's clear to you, has a certain chashivus, has a certain kedusha. But the names of Taurus V'Divon, the names of these cities, which were actually idolatrous cities before they were taken over, so you might think that there isn't any importance to that, so perhaps there's no need to repeat it. So the Gemara goes out of its way to say, no, Taurus V'Divon, you, Taka, should repeat. Others point out similarly that this whole idea that these names are Avodah Zarah's names, so there is a tradition, the Gemara says, that you're not supposed to use idolatrous names unless, especially after the names have been changed, unless these names are mentioned in Chumash. So some Achronim explain that you might think that you can't read these phrases, Machalat Mashbashi, you shouldn't use these Avodah Zarah names because they're not really mentioned in Chumash. But the fact that they're mentioned in Targum, the fact they're mentioned in the translation, which has ancient origins also, which has holy origins also, so that is enough reason to be able to read them. That's how some Achronim understand. There is a very striking comment in the Taru Tamimah. The Taru Tamimah says that the reason, the difference between Ataris V'Divon and Reuven V'Shimon is Ataris V'Divon, you might think that you don't have to read Shnei Mikvayach HaTargum because it doesn't make any difference to the story. If you leave out this pasuk, it doesn't affect the story at all. That's very striking. So what's he saying? He's saying you have psukim in the Torah that are dispensable, you have psukim in the Torah that you don't really need. It's a very striking comment, and many have tried to explain what the Taurus Mim is getting at. What is he saying about a Taurus Adivon? That this pasuk you can just skip, it doesn't matter, he's deciding what psukim are important or not. So that's probably not what he means. And my grandfather actually wrote a sefer on the Taurus Mim called Meshivas Nefesh, in which he explains what he means by referring to the comments of the Taurus Mim's father-in-law. Taurus Mim's father-in-law, his name was Reblaz Moshe Harvitz, and he wrote a commentary to some Mesechtes. So in the back of Mesechus Brachus, you have the commentary of Reblaz Moshe Harvitz. And he has comments there which kind of explain what the Taurus Tumim is getting at. And what Taurus Tumim is getting at is that the difference between, let's say, Reuven V'Shimon and Ataris V'Divon is that really anytime you have names, anytime you have something where a translation is not really going to add so much, so yes, taka true, you wouldn't necessarily need to have a Targum for that. But the problem is, when it comes to Reuven V'Shimon, you're going to have to read the Psukim, because if you read the Aramaic version of the beginning of Parsha Shmos, so you'll have Elohan Shmas B'nei Yisrael, and these are the names of the tribes of Israel. And then you're just going to skip those psukim. It's not going to make any sense. So those psukim, Reuven Shimon, yes, in theory you could have skipped them, but you're going to be reading something that doesn't make any sense if you skip the psukim that list the names, because you're going to say, these are the names, and you're not going to say anything.
Names do have translations.
Right, so names of Reuven Shimon don't really have, the Aramaic tells you the same thing. If you read the psukim, you read the unklus of Reuven Shimon, it just says Reuven Shimon Levi Yehuda. It says the exact same thing.
Yeah, but you've got to translate it to a different language. If you don't speak Hebrew, you don't know what the Reuven means, or Yaakov, or
Right, sometimes in some languages there are translations, but it depends. Sometimes you can translate what a name means, and sometimes a name does take on a different form in different languages. But it happens to be, and so as far as the Aramaic is concerned, and as far as the translation that we'd be reading, so in Aramaic, Reuven and Shimon comes out this exact same way as it does in Hebrew, and the translation doesn't tell us anything, so you might think that there's no need to read the translation then. Right, we have to figure out exactly what the goal of Targum is. That's something else we want to discuss. What exactly is Targum coming to tell us? But at least the Targum that we're dealing with, the Targum we're dealing with of Unklus, is not going to give us anything different for Reuven and Shimon, so you might think you could skip it. And what the Targum seems to be getting at is that indeed you could have skipped it. The problem is the context is going to force you to read it, because if you're going to read a pasuk that says, these are the names of the children of Israel, and then not have any names, so it's not going to make any sense. It's not going to be any flow. So you're forced to read a pasuk you wouldn't necessarily have had to because of the context. He says, however, when it comes to Ataris V'divon, so you might think that you don't have to because the translation is just translating names, so maybe you might think you could skip the pasuk. And the context doesn't, if you look at the context there, it doesn't force you to read the pasuk. You can read the pasukim and skip it, and it's still going to make sense. So it's not to say that the pasuk in Chumash is any less important. It's just to say that the need for translation is not so much there, and the context doesn't force you to read it in translation. So you might think you can skip it. So then the Gemara comes and tells you, no, it's not true. Even Ataris V'divon, even this pasuk, which is just names, even that you have to read, even that it is integral to the context. And then if you look in the Sefer Meshivas Nefesh, she explains, based on the context there, why it is, it's a little bit out of the context of our discussion, but why it is that pasuk does fit into the context of the story, and that really there aren't any pasukim in Chumash which you can just leave that. I think the Torah Tzvima observes that this really is the only pasuk in Chumash where you might have thought that, where you might have thought that you could skip the pasuk and not disrupt the flow of the story at all. And the Gemara is coming to tell you that no, it's not even true that even this one pasuk, the Torah's flow needs it to be there, and the context does force you to read the translation, even though it doesn't really seem to add so much. But in any case, nowadays, the Unklus that we have does have a translation for this pasuk, and that's indeed what we read. So there is also a little bit of a question, this last point of the context forcing us is interesting, because there is a little bit of a question as to what should the order be. This is a big dispute which we're not going to take a side on, but a little bit of a question how you should go about Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum. Should you read it pasuk by pasuk, go verse by verse, maybe say one verse twice and then read the translation, or should you do it parsha by parsha? By parsha by parsha, we don't mean parsha shmos, but we mean parsha the way the parshas are broken up in the Torah with the peis and the samas, with the psuchas and stumas. Maybe you should do one parsha at a time and then read the mikra of that. So I think Rav Cook points out in the Sefer also that this seems to maybe underlie a little bit this question of Reuven v'Shimon, because this whole question of whether or not there is a context forcing you to read the Targum, so that's more relevant if you're reading a whole parsha at a time. If you're reading a whole parsha in straight Aramaic, so then there's going to be a context that may or may not force you to read everything within it. But if you're reading one pasuk at a time, then there could be more room to say that, okay, this individual pasuk stands on its own, and the Targum isn't really going to add anything, so maybe I could skip the Targum. There might be a little bit more room to say that. In any case, this is a big discussion whether or not you should read one pasuk at a time or one parsha at a time. It's a little bit relevant to the question of whether or not we really are doing it for our own personal edification, our own personal learning, because if that's the purpose, so then as many poskim point out, then it's important to do the targum together with the pasuk, one pasuk at a time, one targum at a time, in order that the meaning should be attached to what you just read. Because if you read the parsha by itself and then go read the Targum by itself, so it's very hard to connect the Targum to the Psukim. So
right,
to,
I think it's easier to read it.
Right, if you do it one Pasuk at a time, so
yeah,
then
I think it's much easier.
Right, that's how many Pasukim point down. Right, so then it's as far as doing it for your own personal learning, so then one Pasuk at a time seems to be a more manageable approach.
Right,
and that's how some Pasukim talk out, that's how some Pasukim point out. Some Pasukim feel it should make a difference for Shema. This is a side question that people bring up when it comes to Kriyat, when it comes to Psukim of Shema. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says in Megillah, it comes up in Brachas also, that HaOmer Shema Shema Meshaskin Oso, that if somebody says Shema twice, so we tell them to be quiet, we tell them not to do that. Because the problem is, Shema is our big profession of faith, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and if we say it twice, so it sounds like we're talking to two different gods. Yeah, I believe your God, and I believe your God. It sounds like we're talking to two different people. So the Gemara tells us then the Mishnah tells us that there is an appropriateness to saying Shema twice. Homer Shema, Shema Mishanskinoso. So some posts can point out that even if the whole rest of the Torah you're going to read one pasuk at a time, pasuk once, pasuk twice, then targum, you shouldn't do that with the pasuk of Kriyash, with the pasuk of Shema Yisrael, because it seems like you're in violation of this din that the Gemara has of Homer Shema, Shema Mishanskinoso. Other, but this is a discussion in the Tshuva Zeruva Sefraim and others, and I think Chazon Ish talks about this a little bit. And other posts can point out that perhaps the context of Limud is different. It's only in a Tfilah context when you're actually saying Kriya Shema that it's a problem to say it twice and appear to be addressing two gods. But just in the context of learning, where you're just reading the Pasuk in the Torah, which happens to be used for purposes of Kriya Shema, so then it's not necessarily a problem. This is a discussion in Poskim. How should we deal with this Pasuk when it comes to Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum? And there are those who felt that because of this issue, that perhaps even if the rest of the Torah you go Pasuk by Pasuk, when it comes to the section that involves Kriya Shema, there you should go Parsha by Parsha. That's a little bit of a discussion just to be aware of. There is, just to mention a few more points, related to this. So there is also a discussion as to the extra leanings. So we read the parsha every week, but we also read the Torah many other times, Yom Tovim and Dalet Parshias, you know, the four extra readings that we have around the time of Adar and Nisan. So what about that? Is there an obligation of Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum for those readings? So the Shulchan Aruch says that there isn't. And Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuvas and Arachayim and Chelek Gimel and Mem Vav figures that this would certainly extend to Dalet Parshias also, to Parshias Shkolim and Parshias Zachar and Parshias Parah, etc., that those Parshias also, being that they are in addition to their being read once in their normal Parshias, so there is no extra obligation to do Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum on those Psukim. And the Menachem Aharon explained that it really would depend on what your whole approach to Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum is. That if you just have to be prepared for the laning, so then any extra laning may impose an extra obligation to go over it. If, however, the goal of Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum is really just that we should be fluent in all of Chumash, and Chazal broke it up in order to correspond to the way that Tzibur is reading it, so it could be that that seems to apply only to the base obligation of Kriyas HaTorah Shabbos morning. But any additional Kriya, which is a repetition of the same readings that we have, so perhaps there wouldn't be an additional obligation of Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum. And that seems to be the mainstream approach that the Shulchan Aruch and Rav Moshe Feinstein are reflecting, that there's only one obligation for the basic Parsha, but there isn't any obligation that comes up in addition. There's also a little bit of a discussion whether or not there should be Shnei Mikra by the Haftarah. Some have a chumra to do that. I don't know if that's necessarily the mainstream approach, but in keeping with this whole Tzibur idea, there are some who had such a practice to read over the Haftarah as well. This also has a little bit of relevance. The Talmud Tzibur idea has a little bit of relevance. So ideally, the parasha is going to be read during that week of the parasha, whatever parasha it is. Shmos is going to be read this week. It seems to be you have the whole week to do it. It's a little bit of a question where exactly the cutoff point is. And the new sefer that the Rebbe Shechter just printed of Rebbe Soloveitchik's practices, Pnine Harav, so he cites there that Rav Soloveitchik felt that really the ikar time to do it was on Shabbos, that you should really do it Friday night, and just that the idea that we could do it during the week before then is kind of a kula.
Can you do it after the reading?
So that's part of the question. It's a little bit of a question where exactly the cutoff is. Some posts can have an expression of before the Suda on Shabbos, and it's a question whether they mean before lunch or whether they mean before dinner. So then there is one opinion in Rishonim, the Rebbeinu Simcha, which many rely on, that it's possible to make it up until Simcha's Torah, which, depending on your vantage point, is either a kula or a chumra. It's theoretically a kula, but then when it comes to Simcha's Torah, you have to read the entire Torah, so that could be viewed as a little bit of a chumra, but there is that position that many rely on, which also plays a role to the next question. So what should the din be when it comes to an ovel, when it comes to a person who is in mourning? So Rachmana Litzlan, such a person is forbidden to learn Torah. So what is the status of Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum? Because you have to figure out exactly how it fits in. Because
how long a period does a person who's in mourning cannot read Torah?
for the person of Shiva, for a period of Shiva, for 7 days. So during that period of time, so an Avel, a person who is, God forbid, in mourning, so is not supposed to be learning Torah. But at the same time, we do allow Kriya Shema, we allow certain things which are Mechovas Hayom, which are part of the pattern of the day, we do allow that. So, and Kriya Shetara also, so the Avel has the Shiva minion in his house, so that involves Kriya Shetara as well on the days that it's appropriate. So on the one hand, for a person to have a shir in his house, a person to be learning by himself, we don't allow that. Stam Lima Torah, we don't allow during Shiva, but there are certain things which technically are Torah, such as Kriya Shetara and such as Kriya Shema, things like that, which technically are Torah study, but we do allow an Avel to do them. So the approach seems to be that those things which are part of the pattern of the day, part of the pattern of the davening, even though they may technically be a fulfillment of Talmud Torah, we allow an Avel to do. And those things that are not part of the pattern of the day, but are straight learning of Torah, we don't allow an Avel to do. So where does Shnayim Mikra V'Yachatagim fit into that pattern? So that's a big question in Poskim. It's a big debate. And some Poskim felt that the fact that you have this Rabbeinu Simcha, the fact that you have an idea that you can make it up later on, so that seems to indicate that it's not really part of the obligation of the day, it's just an obligation of Talmud Torah, which was patterned after that day, so better you should make this up, better you should do it later, and better than rather than have it that day. Well, this felt that no, that it's just part of your normal structure of your week, no part of your normal structure of your day, and therefore even an Avil should be permitted to fulfill this obligation. So that's a discussion post, which goes back to this basic question, how do we view the entire Takana? The Maharsham has a tshuva also in relation to that point, the point of making things up. So once we get into this idea, once we get into the territory of allowing you to make up parshias, so then you can have a question, so what becomes your priority? Let's say I didn't do Shnayim Mikra last week, so let's say I have to make up Vayechi. So now, this week, I have an obligation of reading Shmos, and I have an obligation of reading Vayechi. So what should I take care of first? So the Maharsham discusses this in his Tshuvas, and he felt strongly that you have to do the Parsha of this week first, that your first priority is to do Parsha Shmos, and then you worry about Parsha Vayechi. And he points out that somebody showed him that in the Orzarua it sounds not that way, and the discussion about this in later posts as well, but that was his opinion, that you should give priority to the Parsha of this week.
When does that start?
Sorry?
When does that start?
When does the week start? Right, so that's also a little bit of a question, how exactly we pinpoint the exact details. It's a little bit of a question in Rishonim. But let's say, at least between Shabbosim, then that seems to be, some suggest that after Kriya Shetara already by Mincha time, that already starts next week. Some are more makel to allow up until Mincha, at least until you start reading a different parasha, that should be the parasha. That's a big technical debate. But let's say, for example, right now, so now is Wednesday, so actually, there are some Rishonim that even extend the week until Wednesday. But
right,
so
right, between Kiddush, or between Friday night meal and Tuesday night.
Right, it's a little bit of a questionable period. But so to stay out of that debate. But at least now, at least tonight, for example, a person wants to do Shnayim Mikra. So what should his priority be? So the Maharsham felt strongly that the priority should be Shmos, and that seems to be viewing it really more as a Chovas Hayom kind of thing, that's similar to Tefillah, right? We have a concept you can make up Tefillah. Let's say a person misses Shacharis. So the Gemara says, if you miss Shacharis, and it's already Mincha time, so you can say an extra Shemona Esrei if you missed it for any kind of legitimate reason, anything short, the way the Aruch HaShulchan says, anything short of intentionally choosing to miss davening. So the din is that you're allowed to say an extra Shemona Esrei at Mincha to make up for what you missed at Shacharis. You can daven two Shemona Esreis at Mincha. But the Gemara is very emphatic to say, and the later sources emphasize this even more, that first you daven Mincha, first you take care of your obligation now, and then you make up the previous obligation. So the first Shemona Esrei must be for Mincha, it's very important in Halacha, and the second Shemona Esrei is Shacharis, and you're not supposed to switch that around. So too, the Maharsham says, you have to bring the same attitude towards Shnayim Mikra V'Yachatagim, and he seems to really be understanding it as a Chiyuv Hayom kind of thing. Just because again, late, just to mention one or two other nakudas. So there is a little bit of a question whether or not there's an Indian to specifically incorporate the truff into your kriya. Should you read it together with the musical notes that the Kriya Satara is done with? And some point out that if you believe the whole purpose is to be prepared for Kriya Satara, then it makes more sense. While for the straight Limra Tari thing, there might be more room to not worry about that so much. Although it could be that the truff has some significance for Talmud Torah as well. It's a little bit of a discussion. And the Shuvas van Hagis, Rav Moshe Sternbach, in his Shuvas, so he suggests that there is kind of a distinct division between the Mikra and the Targum. The Mikra is supposed to represent Tarsh Baal Peh, actually Tarsh Bechsav, the written Torah, and the Targum is supposed to represent Tarsh Baal Peh, supposed to represent the oral tradition. And therefore, the Trup is something that's part of Tarsh Bechsav that you should do for the Mikra, but you shouldn't try to carry it over to the Unklos, because that's distinct, that's Tarsh Baal Peh, that's a whole different approach. And that also would have another ramification, which is an important point, and we'll end with that, that there is a major distinction between written Torah and oral Torah as far as understanding goes. That as far as your obligation, as far as you want to fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, so if you read Psukim and Chumash, and you just read them and you don't understand them, so you still fulfill on some level Torah study, because just reading Psukim of Torah fulfills some obligation of Talmud Torah. But when it comes to Tarsh Baal Peh, when it comes to the oral Torah, person wants to read Gemara, person wants to learn Mishnah, something like that. So there the text is really not as significant. The text is just a way of marking down the oral tradition, and it's really the meaning behind it that's more significant. And if a person just reads Gemara but doesn't understand anything, a person just sits and reads the Baba Basra and doesn't have any idea what any of the words mean, but he knows how to read Hebrew letters, so then there isn't really any fulfillment of Talmud Torah in that sense. So as distinct from Tarsh Bechsav, where there is some fulfillment just in reading the words. So, therefore, Moshe Sternbach suggests that if the Targum is supposed to represent Tarsh Baal Peh, so then it's important to understand what it means, and especially if we understand Targum as the whole goal is to try to make the Psukim more understandable to us, so then it is important to try to understand what the Psukim mean. And therefore, one should either make a big effort to try to understand what Unklos is adding to the Pasuk, or in addition to this, Unklus reads something which does explain the psukim to him. That's why some poskim have suggested that nowadays, in order to fulfill this obligation, one could use an English translation or perhaps other translations which will more fit in with your experience as far as understanding what the psukim mean. And others suggest that maybe you should try to do both, because since we're not 100% sure what Targum is supposed to accomplish for us, on the one hand it could be that it's trying to explain the psukim to us, on the other hand it could be that Targum has a kind of a Sinaitic origin also. The Gemara says in the beginning of Masechet Megillah, the Targum was given together with the Torah, so maybe it contains things that are not present in the living Torah, for example. So, which some posts can say could work. So maybe you should try to do both. And the Shulchan Aruch was very sensitive to this, and the Shulchan Aruch says that he's not sure, the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Reish Behei, he's not sure what exactly is the Iker fulfillment of Targum. Is it Unklus, or is it, let's say, Rashi? He says that Rashi explains what the Torah is talking about. So maybe you should say Rashi should be a way of dealing with the Targum better. So the Shulchan Aruch says, really, you should do both. And that makes the obligation even a little bit more of a challenge. But that seems that that's a practice that Shulchan Aruch reflects, that one should read Psukim twice and read Unklus and Rashi in order to try to cover all of our bases as far as figuring out what our obligation is. And that is a practice that many people have, to read Psukim twice and Unklus and Rashi. And if you still feel that you need something else in order to supplement your understanding of the Psukim, then it's certainly appropriate and recommended to incorporate an English translation or whatever it is that will address coming to a greater understanding of the Psukim. Okay, so we'll end there. God willing, next week we'll talk.